Fast forward to the end of 2024. Think of your goals. What can you do right now to give yourself the best chance of succeeding? If you want to learn a new language, you absolutely should get Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. I absolutely love Babbel because their courses help me learn real-life conversational skills. It's so easy to learn how to order food, ask for directions, speak to the locals without having to consult language apps. Babbel has over 16 million subscriptions sold. Plus, all of Babbel's 14 award-winning language courses are backed by their 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time offer for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, at babbel.com/SPP. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/SPP. That's spelled BABBEL.com/SPP. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is Smart People Podcast, a podcast for smart people, where we talk to smart people, but not necessarily done by smart people.
Hello and welcome to Smart People Podcast, conversations that satisfy your curious mind. Chris Stemp here. Thanks for tuning in. This is a timely episode because you're probably aware of the massive lawsuit that was recently settled regarding the National Association of Realtors and the commission structure that has dominated the real estate industry for decades. And it just so happens that our guest this week is the founder and president of the largest real estate agency in the world, RE/MAX. Now, I will tell you in advance, we do not specifically talk about the lawsuit. There's many reasons why, primarily because when I interviewed him, it was actually prior to when that decision was made. There was a lot less discussion about it in the public. And also, he wanted to come on to talk about leadership in his book, which we do for the second half of the interview. However, I do spend the entire first half of the interview talking about similar topics. We talk about the state of real estate right now. We talk about the impact of short-term rentals such as Airbnb on the market. We talk about whether you should invest in the real estate market, according to him, and much more. The truth of the matter is real estate is, has been, and always will be an interesting discussion for everyone. Owning a home is part of the American dream. Investing in real estate has become the new stock market. And so we figured, why not go to one of, if not the biggest players in the game, Dave Liniger. As mentioned, Dave is the co-founder of RE/MAX, the Denver-based global real estate franchise that he co-founded with his wife, Gail, in 1973. Since its founding, it has become the leading franchisor of real estate offices throughout the world and has expanded to over 9,000 offices in 110 countries with 140,000 plus sales agents. Dave is recognized as not just an incredible entrepreneur, but one of the best operators and leaders in the industry. As you can imagine, when you lead a profitable company for longer than 5 decades in an industry such as real estate, you pick up a few things. And so that's why Dave has written this brand new book called The Perfect 10, 10 Leadership Principles to Achieve True Independence, Extreme Wealth, and Huge Success. Dave is incredibly intelligent, sharp, and articulate. He really does have a wealth of knowledge to pass down to anybody, not just about real estate, but about starting a business, entrepreneurship, grit and resilience, and leadership. Reach out to us at smartpeoplepodcast@gmail.com or sign up for our newsletter at smartpeoplepodcast.com. Let's get into it. Our discussion with Dave Liniger as we talk about his brand new book, The Perfect 10, 10 Leadership Principles to Achieve True Independence, Extreme Wealth, and Huge Success. Enjoy. You probably have a better vantage point than many of what's happening right now in the market. Do you think we're in a bubble, or do you think this is unsustainable?
Well, I don't think we're in a bubble necessarily. There's a tremendous groundswell of people who want to buy a home. They can't buy them because the prices have gotten too high, and the interest rates have changed dramatically over what they were for 15 years. When you look at interest rates, right now, 7.5% or so is traditional. We started the firm in 1973. In the 51 years afterwards, the interest rates started at about 6% over the period of time. The savings and loan crisis, the inflationary problems we had during Reagan's term, they changed the interest rate on mortgages to 17.5%. And then, fortunately, a couple of years later, they went back down to the 7 range, and people just refinanced and got out of the bad mortgage. Today, you're looking at a 15-year time period where the rates were artificially low, as low as 2.5%, some words up to 5%. And it's over 60% of the mortgages right now are 5% or less. And that creates a problem for people that want to move up, because they're going to not only buy a more expensive place, but they're going to give up their low interest loan and take a much more expensive loan. So there's a hesitancy to get out of the lower priced properties, which in itself stops first time buyers from getting their foot in the door. So when you start looking at it, this is a temporary aberration. People will get used to a normal rate. The average rate in the last 51 years is 7.78%. We were just really spoiled for a while. And so the question is, when will the rates start to come back down? And nobody has the crystal ball. The feds keep telling us mixed messages. They're stating, well, don't look forward to any cuts in the first 6 months. And then they come out with the next time and they say, well, we're fast approaching what we think is the decision point, and maybe it'll be sooner than that. So realistically speaking, there isn't anybody's going to be able to figure that out except for the feds when they do it. But there's still plenty of business out there, and there's good business. The real estate business has no barriers to entry. Residential real estate, some states, all you have to do is take a simple test and maybe study for 10 hours. The turnover rate is atrocious. Consumer Federation Union published some results a few weeks ago, said that 50% of the NAR members, National Association of Realtors, have not closed a transaction in 12 months. So it's the 80-20 rule. The 20% of the business, all full-time, all productive, very serious about their business, been in the business 10, 20 years. They have a good book of business. They got people that are referring them. They got buybacks that want to move up and do something. Bear in mind, that's not the market that we had 3 or 4 years ago, but there's a good market out there. It's just a difficult market.
And I'm sure you've seen a number of difficult markets. Like you said, the interest rate average over 50 years, close to 8%. I remember complaining to my dad about how high interest rates are. And he said, first house I bought was something like 12% or 10%. You know, that whole, we used to walk uphill both ways argument. But you know, with the interest rates potentially never going back to sub 3, or at least perhaps normalizing, and with a lower income growth rate that we have, do you think that we will somehow solve this challenge of the cost now to buy a house versus where most people's incomes are?
Yeah, I think long term, the problem will be solved. You've got the aging generation, the baby boomers are not only retiring, but they're dying. And as a matter of fact, the people over 55, that's about 1.5 million 100,000 residences a year being given to either the surviving spouse or going straight to the market. And so that'll help relieve some of the pressure over the future years. Home building is picking up. Home builders have an advantage over resales, and that home builders usually work with a margin of 25 or 30%. And so if interest rates are still at 7.5, they can buy down a 30-year mortgage by, you know, paying up front maybe 5% of the net that they were going to make off the whole property and pay it down to 5.5 or 6%. And so I think you're going to see the demand for new homes will continue to accelerate. And of course, resales will follow on behind.
You know, I'm 40, so I feel like kind of in that get a bigger house, maybe not, et cetera. And my age group is also one that I think was heavily impacted by the crash of 08, just because that was our formative years. And so we have this almost PTSD about the potential for the bottom to always drop out. And that's what I notice in my perception.
Yes. Well, the real estate industry is very cyclical. And the interesting aspect of it is my company has lived through and survived 9 different presidencies, including the 2 people that were debating last night.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them delivered their State of the Union, 2 different viewpoints. We've been through 7 recessions, and some were as simple as 1973, the first oil embargo, and nobody could get gasoline, and so we couldn't even show houses. Then you got the savings and loan crisis. We adapted to that. Then you get the high interest rates, and then the financial crisis. Smart top professionals are adaptable. They see what's happening, and they find a way under, over, through, beside it, whatever it is, they're going to get the job done. And so long-term real estate is a great investment, but short-term swings, yeah. I mean, if you own your house, you pay it off over 30 years, you never saw it when the house decreased in price 10%, but you do see it at the end of 30 years that, oh my, look what I have versus what I paid for it back then.
This episode is brought to you by Factor. Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to go in just 2 minutes. You'll have over 35 different options to choose from every week, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Also, there are more than 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and feeling good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and get after your goals. Fuel up fast with Factor's restaurant-quality meals that are ready to heat and eat whenever you are. Discover a wide variety of easy options for the entire day, like breakfast, midday bites, and more. Get as much or as little as you need by choosing your meals every week. Plus, you can pause or reschedule your deliveries anytime. We've done the math. Factor is less expensive than takeout, and every meal is dietitian approved to be nutritious and delicious. Factor is the perfect solution if you're looking for fast, premium options with no cooking required. Head over to factormeals.com/smart50 and use the code SMART50 to get 50% off. That's code SMART50, SMART50, at factormeals.com/smart50 to get 50% off.
It's a great point you brought up about the longevity of your company. And in an industry like this, which has these massive swings, what have you personally learned and done over the decades to not just, honestly, at some point, throw up your hands? Like, there's homeowners, right, that haven't been able to tolerate the swings. Imagine somebody like yourself, one, you know, largest real estate company there is. How do you deal with it?
Courage comes from confidence. Confidence comes from experience. And 51 years of owning my company, plus 4 or 5 years licensed before that, has given me the confidence that it always will change. We're going to have these downturns, and the smart will survive. The weak will fall out. The market comes back, and NAR's membership will soar again with a whole bunch of people thinking, boy, that's an easy job. And so for the most part, It's just the confidence that been there, done that, got the t-shirt, I'm still standing.
Mm-hmm. Dave, you just mentioned something. I'm going to tell you because this is going to be the one chance I get to talk to you in my life. So I graduated college in 2005. And I remember a lot of my, I won't say friends, just acquaintances at that time who perhaps didn't take their academics extremely seriously. I remember all of them jumping into real estate, right? Being a real estate agent and immediately making pretty good money. You know, we're 21, 22 years old. I'm just trying to scrap my career together. And I see these people and I remember something click going, wait a sec. If all these people are supposedly making all this money, it's that easy. I don't see this lasting very long. And sure enough, you know, maybe 2 years in, the bottom of that fell out. And so to your point, it does take the resilience and the courage because those that made it through, a really good friend of mine owns a real estate agency and he's crushing it. He's been doing, you know, he's been doing amazing for over a decade. So it's just a funny time for me professionally to enter and then to see your experience over the long haul.
The thing is funny is Denver was received a whole lot of oil people that came up from Texas and they were all driving Mercedes and Cadillacs and went into a boom bust cycle with oil and started seeing some bumper stickers that said, oh God, please give me one more oil boom. I promise I won't piss this one away.
Yeah.
And so yeah. I've seen that on realtors cars. Oh, just one more boom and I'll get out.
And they never can because it's too enticing. You know what I mean? I'm curious on your take on the future of real estate agents, the real estate market, you know, as it seems like, and I'm not as educated in this, but all of these industries have evolved in a consumer-centric way and fees have come down. And yet people still talk about realtor fees and are they earning it? Because we can go on Zillow. What do you think of that take? And then where do you think we're going as it relates to fees and things of that nature?
Well, I think there's always the downward pressure on commission rates. Part of that pressure is just the unbelievable competition for companies to get the best agents they can get. And so they have to pay as high a split as they can, which takes away the money they've got to reinvest in their business. I think long-term, 20 years ago, all the tech companies came in and said, we put the booksellers out of business. We did this, we did that. We ruined travel agencies and we're going to do the same thing in the real estate business. And 20 years later, they woke up to the fact of the customer doesn't care about the technology. They need a trusted advisor. This is the biggest investment they're going to make. And if it's the first time you've done it, it's scary. And that so you need a realtor. So I think there's pressures out there that long-term commission rates are going to come down. House prices are going to continue to go up over the long term. And so that's just a natural evolution. But it's not a overnight thing like the travel agents or the booksellers ran into.
What do you think about, you know, the influx of short-term rentals into the real estate market? How has that impacted your business? And where do you think that might go?
You know, that's a really hard one to predict. The short-term rentals really haven't affected the real estate business too much, but you are finding places where homeowners associations are getting together to ban that because they have a transitory population coming in, renting a place for a week that's on vacation versus neighbors that are going to live there for 10 years. And so that's constantly changing. If you have a solid neighborhood, you got neighborhood watch, you know, if there's a sexual predator in the neighborhood of any kind. You don't know that with a huge amount of rental property that is being picked up on a weekly or two-weekly basis. So I think it's still going to be here, but I think it's going to get harder and harder to do.
What advice would you give to the person who might have some liquidity? They're looking for good returns. They're interested in real estate, but again, concerned often about market fluctuations.
Well, you have to understand that a tremendous amount of the single family houses, condos, and townhomes are rental properties, far more than what you'd think. And everybody looks at Wall Street and says, oh, well, they brought in and they bought 10,000 units or 20,000 units. 80% of the single family residences that are used as rentals are owned by individuals.
Wow. And
they're usually somebody that owns 3 to 5 of them. And so they understand it's a task. You got to rent it. You got to keep it renovated. You get called in the middle of the night because the toilet doesn't work. And so it's not a passive investment at all. But long term, the real estate residential prices have always long term outperformed the stock market.
So it sounds like if you're willing to roll up your sleeves, you are a fan of investing in real estate potentially.
Yes, I am.
Well, Dave, one of the things I want to pivot to, there aren't that many moguls anymore. I was amazed in doing my research. You founded and still run over 5 decades. I believe it's the largest real estate company in at least the country.
Largest in transactions and volume worldwide. We have 9,000 offices, 140,000 plus agents in 110 countries.
That's an incredible accomplishment. I have to know, going back to when you started, because there's so many people who see the success at the end, but don't really know the mindset at the beginning. Did you ever imagine it getting to where it is today?
Oh, I very naively, in my first press release, announced the formation of my first office, which I said eventually would grow to 5,000 offices across the world.
Wow. So you did.
So is that naive or what?
Well, maybe it's just, all knowing. Maybe it's reading the future, right?
You know, I had no idea how tough the first 2 or 3 years was going to be. The industry was totally against us. They didn't want a new commission concept to where we were paying the top producers much more and not hiring beginners and part-timers. And that was a threat to the industry because they were going to have, if it worked, they're going to have to pay their top producers more. So they were working really diligently to drive me out of business, and they shouldn't have worked so hard because with my mismanagement and my poor leadership, I was doing a pretty good job just by myself.
That's true.
But I managed to find a way to save my company, and I saved it by swallowing my pride. My 8 managers of my 8 offices were 20 years older than me and more experienced. And I went to them and I said, look, what did you like best about the company you worked for? What did you dislike the most? What do you like most about RE/MAX? What do you dislike the most? What do you like the most about me? Ooh, what do you dislike the most? And you better have a thick skin, because if you ask for it, they'll tell you. And it's okay. They can do so diplomatically. However, it still hurts. And so I wanted to know. I said, teach me, grow me up to be the leader you would want me to be. That's a pretty hardcore statement. And the end result was we saved the company. We worked together as a team instead of me as the CEO and owner. We had a team success. Every single great idea in the history of RE/MAX has come from the field. Not a single great idea that I can put my fingers on came from the headquarters. And so being broad-minded, when you have the best agents in the business, they're going to have fantastic ideas. And they're going to have some goofy ideas. You as the owner has got to make the decision which ones are plausible and which ones are just too way out there. But having your ears open and listening instead of just talking is a tremendous attribute of any leader.
You mentioned a little bit the commission structure. What was it about RE/MAX that was not only different from the competition, but allowed you all to grow into what you are today?
Yes. In 1973, real estate agents worked for the company on basically a 50-50 split. And the agent took their 50% as income and pay their expenses like the automobile, Social Security, health insurance, et cetera. There are no salaries in residential real estate. And then the company used their half to have an office, secretarial assistants, advertising, marketing, and attempt to make a profit. What we looked at it and said, there's so much turnover. 9 out of 10 people that get a real estate license would not even renew it one time. And so you had all this money wasted on training people that just couldn't make it. And so we said, why not act like a co-op of doctors, lawyers, architects, dentists that work together in one office space, but they're all already successful and doing well. And so you're in business for yourself, but not by yourself. And as a co-op, you split the cost of running a big company and keep the majority of the income for yourself. As it worked out the first few years, it really came out to about an 85-15 split, and it changed the industry completely. But it was very hard to get started. It took me 5 years in Denver or Colorado to become number one. And all the regions that we opened after that, it basically took them 4 or 5 years to get up to where they were really doing well. And so it's not an overnight success. If you look at our growth spurt, first 10 years, we got to 3,000 agents. The next 10 years, we get to 30,000. The next 10 years, we get to 90,000. And so momentum is great when you get momentum on your side.
As I understand it, the model you essentially created is the primary model of real estate agents today, right?
That's correct.
What I'm trying to root out here is, you know, there's plenty of people, and they're amazing, right? Who start businesses that are seven-figure, eight-figure businesses. But when you become one of the largest in the world in an industry, it is because of a true disruption, an innovation unlike the others, which is what it sounds like you did. And so it's this idea of creating the most value for people is going to be the thing that tends to bring wealth your way.
That's right.
What gave you this idea to go against the grain, to push against historical norms of a industry that had been around forever?
I worked for three different brokerages when I first started. I was still in the military. And so I got to see how mom and pop shop worked, how a large regional company worked, and then how an alternative commission split could possibly work. When I came to Denver, I had to get a broker's license and get my residency to start my own company. So I worked for the best real estate company in the United States. In 1971, the average agent made $50,000 a year, and the average full-time realtor made $5,000 a year. So they were extraordinary. They had great training. They had market share. They had great leadership and management. And so often an idea is not original. What you do is you make a hybrid of two ideas. And this concept of a co-op was one part of it. But if all we did was charge a desk fee, then we were just renting out our desk. We weren't really leading and managing and bringing money into the individuals. And so we imitated the desk fee concept, but we also looked at Van Schaik, the great company that it was at the time, and said, what did they do right? And we emulated what they did right. We started training from the first day. We started our own systems. We embraced all the changes that came along. And we provided the best leadership in the history of the industry.
It was a mix of, hey, we're going to add this new commission structure, but we're not just going to then charge people for it, which I would imagine there was pressure to do because that's an easier business model.
Well, within 5 years, because we became so famous and I traveled the country giving seminars to try to sell franchises, by the way, there were at least 1,100 imitator companies within 5 years that said, we're operating on the RE/MAX system.
Well, what was the difference? Why didn't those work and yours did?
They operated on Rent-A-Desk. They didn't see through the background of, I took a Rent-A-Desk idea, but I added to it superior leadership and management.
Wow. You know, there's a lot of people listening who will respect what you've accomplished, but feel like it's unattainable for themselves. Were you a business guru, genius, top of your class, you know, knew you were always going to revolutionize an industry? Or what would you say to people who have doubts, although they have aspirations?
I grew up on a farm, Marion, Indiana, graduated in the lower fourth probably of my high school class. But back then, everybody graduated. You know, we all stuck with it. We were 17 or 18.
Yeah.
Tried college for a semester or two. Didn't have mommy and daddy there to make me study at night. I discovered fraternities, girls, beer.
Nice. All the best parts of college.
And I had no goal. I didn't go to college saying, my dream is to become a doctor. My dream is to become a attorney. I just went because my parents said, you're going to college. I gave it up. I joined the military during Vietnam, and I served for 6 or 7 years. And in that time period, it gave my little boy brain time to grow up and mature and become a human. I saw real leadership. I saw failed leadership. I learned discipline. I always had a great work ethic. Growing up on a farm, you learn, you know, you do your chores. You got to do your work. And so as I started getting towards the end of my career in the military, I started investing in real estate. And then eventually I got a real estate license to save the commission on my own deals. So in reality, most people sell themselves short. They're afraid because they just don't have the confidence. And confidence comes from experience. And so my military experience was a godsend to me. It taught me to be fearless. It taught me to follow the system. It taught me to be part of a team. And with that, I had no second thoughts when I started my company.
Hmm. That is an impressive statement. And I understand why. It was your previous experience that led you to believe, I mean, why not me? Is that fair?
That's correct.
You have achieved this wild success and have remained working throughout that whole time. What are the best parts of success and what have been the most difficult parts of, you know, monetary and business success?
The best part of success is financial freedom. Second best part is the relationships that you build that last throughout your lifetime. I still have people who joined me in 1973 are still in Remax. And I still have many of my brokers that were my founding brokers the first 10 years that are still owning their own offices at this time. And I receive, as they retire, unbelievable letters to me and my wife about, thank you for changing my life. I never dreamed I could have this kind of success. I have a happy life. I have a great family. I have wealth to retire on. This has been a great trip. And so that's where the personal satisfaction comes in, of a handshake and a hug and a smile that says, hey, buddy, we made it together. So the difficult parts, of course, is it is a very challenging attempt to be in business 50 years. It helped that I was young when I got started. It helped that I continued to own the company until we went public in 2013. My family still controls basically half of the company and half of it is public. There's always the financial difficulties. There's the downturns. There's the disappointments in people that you were very proud of and thought they could succeed forever. And unfortunately, the team you start with is never going to be the team you end with.
I was wondering, you mentioned working with people and as they retire, you've gotten their messages and the lives you've impacted. Yet, as far as I know, you're still running the company. Nah. You know, most of us, myself included, can't wait to hit that magical number so we can retire. What drives you to keep working and why don't you just go, you know, find a beach and a Mai Tai?
Well, the company's had their own CEOs for many years. I took over just after we went public because the CEO that had been with me 27 years retired. And that was fun running a public company. But I told the investors at the time, I'm still young enough. I'll probably be CEO for 4 or 5 years and we'll have a succession plan. The succession plan did work. I did stop being CEO 5 years ago. I work about 70, 80 days a year for Remax. I do the board meetings. I do the major conventions and the meetings and the brainstorming sessions. And I keep my hand in the pie in the real estate industry, but I stayed fresh by not just doing the same thing every day for 50 years. If I'd sold houses for another 2 or 3 years back then, I would have burned out. But as it was, I started a company. And then all these things happened. My first convention, we had 26 people. Last year, at our 50th anniversary, we had 10 or 12,000 people. I learned how to put on conventions 1 year at a time for almost 50 years. So my job kept changing. And so now my job is I am a trusted advisor. I'm on the board. I'm chairman. I mentor. I try to help the network, but I'm involved in about 20 different businesses that have done very, very well. I went into other businesses so I would not burn out, and I also went into the other businesses because I'm curious. I really am fascinated. I mean, what's a realtor like me doing running 4 motorcycle shops? Well, I like motorcycles. I have some, and it's fun. And it's a different attitude altogether than being around a bunch of professional realtors. So the world's out there. It's just, there's no reason to work your bottom off and flat out retire and just sit on the bank and go fishing or go to the bar and go drinking. I believe that life is meant to be lived in all parts of your life. There was an interesting book 50 years ago called The 3 Boxes of Life. And it said, you live in 3 boxes. The first one is your learning years. That's from the time you're born to the time you finish your education. The middle box, that's your earning years. You start at the bottom of the totem pole. If you get better and better, you do better and better. Then finally, you retire, and that's your yearning years. And the yearning being, you yearn, you wish you'd taken more vacations. You wish you'd spent more time with your family. You wished you'd changed jobs 20 years ago and got into something you really wanted to do. And then often in the yearning years, you're feeble, you're not as strong and muscular as you were, and so you can't do the things you used to want. I have taught that program for 50 years. I received a philanthropy award from NAR a year or so ago, and one of my favorite competitors got up to do the introduction, and he was very kind to me. I've tried for 40 years to convert his office to RE/MAX, but he's got a great office. He likes being independent, and so it's just not for everybody, but we stayed friends as competitors. And at the end, he said, let me tell you about the 3 boxes of life. And he told the audience what I had taught him, and he said, Dave, I've discovered there's 4 boxes. He says, and you're living it. Sudden death overtime. See, I was critically injured in 2012 in a coma for 3 months and a quadriplegic for a year. And so everybody said I would never walk again. And I do walk. I use my electric wheelchair a lot, but I can walk 4,000 steps a day. And so in essence, I wrote a paper that I'm going to share with some people sometime is since I died, because I did flatline and they did have to resuscitate me and all that stuff. And it says, I'd like to thank the doctors and the nurses and the therapists that believed in me and never gave up. Because of them, look at what has happened in my rest of this last 10, 12 years of my life that I almost lost. And I went in to talk about the successors, the taking the company public, the buying a 3,500-acre ranch, which was my dream of a lifetime, to mentoring the people that have taken my places in the companies, to the philanthropy that my wife and I have been involved with for 30-some years. We've just managed to earn more, so we got more to give back to the community. So, yes, sudden death overtime, it's a great time to be alive.
It really is. That's an incredible story, and you kind of alluded to it. Did your perspective on life and approach change greatly after that? Because it seems like, at least in the brief time we've been talking, you know, it didn't too much. You've had a similar approach to life from the beginning.
Yeah, it never changed.
Wow. You know, that's uncommon, right? Like the more common thing is, oh, I did all this stuff and then I had this event and then I realized the woes of my ways. But you had this early wisdom, it seems like.
Yes, there's no finish line. So the reason I wrote the book, The Perfect 10, it's been 2 years of labor of love and at hate at sometimes, and at nearly 500 pages of reading the manuscript 10 different times through 10 different editions to get it the way I wanted it. I wanted to share a legacy of knowledge. I got my knowledge from the School of Hard Knocks. It's a great education, but most people can't afford the tuition. I would have been so much better off if I'd gone to college, got a marketing or a management degree, had some sense about what I was doing when I started. All I had was a passion that I wanted to make it work and I wouldn't fail. And so life is different than what people think of. When you think about karate, oh my, this is fun. So I've got black belts in various types of karate. I excelled at it. I enjoyed it. I started at a very young age. But having a black belt in karate is not all it looks like in the movies. It is better than not having one. But to be honest with you, if you get into a street fight with a street fighter that's just got out of the pen after 10 years of fighting for his life every day, there's no rules there. There's no referee there. Nobody's going to pick up a 2x4 or a knife or a chain and beat the hell out of you. And you better be a street fighter. And I believe all successful small entrepreneurs are actually street fighters. And of course, the rules of engagement are, if you're going to a knife fight, make sure you bring a gun.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, since you're going anyway, why don't you bring two or three friends with guns? And if you can find somebody that's got a tank and a bazooka, bring them along too.
Even better.
There's no such thing as a fair fight.
Mm.
And so as a street fighter, going up against the multimillionaire corporations that you're going to be competing with, you've got to figure out how to survive. And that means you outwork your competition, you outthink your competition. If you're getting older and other people are younger, wiser, and smarter, you just have to figure out how to outwork them.
The book is The Perfect 10, 10 Leadership Principles to Achieve True Independence, Extreme Wealth, and Huge Success. I'd love to know, you know, from your perspective, you just talked about the street fighters. And as somebody who's led thousands and thousands of business people and real estate agents, what do you do when you see more in those people than they see in themselves? Is there a way you can help, or is there advice you could give to people who feel like they want to achieve that that wealth or success, but perhaps they don't have the confidence that you did?
You have to show them by example what can be achieved. People have to grow in small steps. You don't go overnight like, let's say, Microsoft. So Gates is obviously very wealthy, very famous, and everybody thinks, oh, he invented this software company or whatever he did, and he was an overnight billionaire. Nobody realizes that he had been playing with computers for over 10,000 hours before he even got started working as an employee. He was crazy about this technology that he was embarking upon, and so on. And so everybody says, oh, that he must be a genius. I'm not. Well, how many of the people have you interviewed that are college dropouts or didn't finish high school that somehow they had the ambition and the grit to move forward, figure it out step by step? And the bigger the steps you take, the more success you get, the more confident you get, the bigger the steps you can take. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And most people do it the other way. They think negatively, I couldn't do that. Well, you couldn't do that today because I couldn't do it 50 years ago. But 51 years of sticking with it, I got pretty good at it. And so find something you're in love with. What's your real passion? And then figure out, can you make a living at it? And if it's just a hobby thing, maybe you probably aren't going to do that. Maybe you should stick with it. I have a friend that tried for the PGA Tour. He was an awesome golfer. But in talking to several other PGA Tour players, it was, he just didn't have it. And so I sat down, had a heart-to-heart with him, and told him, I said, honest to God, I don't think you're going to make the tour. Why don't you do business? You got a great personality. You're very, very smart. And why don't you go into business and then make money and be the club champion at a private country club? You'll still enjoy your hobby, but you'll have tremendous success for you and your family. And of course, he took the advice.
And what did he go into? I'm curious. What turned him into this this rich guy that gets to play golf?
he went into marketing, of all things.
Nice. Okay.
Of course, like that. That's the path to success. If you can sell, you can become a CEO.
That's true. We're going to link to the book and all of that. You've got the 10 leadership principles in there. I'd love to hear from you. What are your, you know, top one or two principles that you really want to make sure you pass on to generations and that you instill throughout your business?
Number one, when you start talking maybe the 10 things that make a leader a real leader, number one is leaders sell hope. I don't care if it's religion, or if it's politics, or if it's business. If you take a look at Martin Luther King, he was selling hope that brown people, black people, and white people could live peacefully together, nonviolent, and that all of our children could have the same chances. Millions and millions of people followed that dream of hope. When you look at Ronald Reagan, he said, make America great. And then you look at Trump, all he did was add one word, make America great again. If you look at Hillary, she said, stronger with Hillary. That's not selling hope. You look at Obama, the only word he had on his chest, hope. And so what you're doing, whether you're leading realtors, leading a band of special forces, leading a nonprofit, is you're selling hope that we can achieve this that is meaningful to us. And so meaningful to us has to be something that appeals to them. So you'll find a lot of times, look at Susan G. Komen, breast cancer. A man will tell a woman, I understand how you feel getting this diagnosis. You've got to be worried about your husband, your future, what your body's going to look like, who's going to raise your kids if you don't survive. And that's nonsense. That's empathy. But if you want to talk to somebody about hope, it's a cancer survivor that's had breast cancer. That woman can talk woman to woman with the new patient better than any doctor can ever do it, because she had the exact same fears, and she's going to teach and lead by hope. So that's the primary topic, I guess, begin with hope. I have a chapter in there on continual self-improvement. And it's basically most college graduates read no more than 2 books a year after they graduate from college. They get wrapped up in the business, their personal life, whatever it might be. I'm attracted to people who are lifetime learners, people that are willing to bet on themselves, pay money, take seminars, go to courses, read books, not just read them, underline them, outline them, and say, how does this apply to me and my business? How can I continue to be better? And that's all about this life. You know, there is no finish line. And you can't live in the 3 boxes of life. Hopefully you'll get to live in the 4 boxes. But the whole concept is, when you're young in first box, you don't have any money, so I can't be a philanthropist. Well, you've got time. You go to the local nursing home, local hospital, be a candy striper. When you're building your business, your career, you say, I don't have time for that, and I'm not wealthy enough to be a philanthropist yet, and so I really can't afford to take a vacation. Well, you should be having vacations in all 3 boxes of your life. You should be having philanthropy in all 3 boxes of your life. You've got to be giving back. You've got to be learning in all 3 boxes of your life. And if you retire at 65, and that's the magic deal, what is it that you wanted to do that you never had the time to do? Learn a foreign language, take up photography, that's still the same thing. It's a lifetime of learning.
Dave, my last question for you is a little more generic, but and I don't ask it that often, but for somebody like yourself, you know, it's basically just for those that aspire for more, whatever more is in their life, is there any primary theme or piece of advice you wish they knew?
You know, I think the most overwhelming thought I have, and I can't remember where the quote came from, but I've used it many times. I wish I could buy people for what they think they're worth and sell them for what I know they're worth. Because most people don't know what their true value to the world is. They haven't found it. They don't believe in themselves. And I don't mean conceit. I don't mean being arrogant. I just mean they don't really understand what their superpower is. And everybody's got it. So everybody's got something that they're really incredibly good at. And so I just wish people could learn to believe in themselves enough, period.
Couldn't say it any better. Dave, I greatly appreciate it. The book is The Perfect 10, 10 Leadership Principles to Achieve True Independence, Extreme Wealth, and Huge Success. Is there anywhere else, you know, of course, we'll link to that, but anywhere else that you'd like to send those listening if they're interested in this and want to keep up?
You know, they can follow me on davelendiger.com. And often I get lots of tidbits and stuff that are not in the book that I'll start replying to and doing some questions and answers. And it's just a continuous refreshing of rinse and repeat.
Yes, sir. Well, Dave, again, thank you so much for being on the show. I really enjoyed it.
It was my pleasure, Chris. Thank you very much.
A thank you to this week's guest, Dave Liniger. The episode was hosted, as always, by Chris Stemp and produced by yours truly, John Rojas. Dave's book, The Perfect 10, 10 Leadership Principles to Achieve True Independence, Extreme Wealth, and Huge Success, is available wherever books are sold. All right, jumping into the quick housekeeping items. If you'd ever like to reach out to the show, you can email us at smartpeoplepodcast@gmail.com or message us on Twitter @smartpeoplepod. And if you'd like to stay up to date with all things Smart People Podcast, head over to the website smartpeoplepodcast.com and sign up for the newsletter. All right, that's it for us this week. Make sure you stay tuned because we've got a lot of great interviews coming up. And we'll see you all next episode.